Well, good morning, everybody. This is Tobias Rex, and this is the Sharks, Dinosaurs, and Mythical Creatures podcast coming at you right now. I've recently looked on Audio Junkie at the reviews on my podcast. Somebody said that they are working on the Mail Order Monsters remake, and they want to use my information. Well, to whoever said that, and to anyone else who has ideas, questions, or requests, you can contact me at sdmcpodcast@gmail.com. That's where you can find me. And now, without further ado, let's get into the episode. This morning's episode is my second Halloween special. It is on one of, if not the most popular Halloween horror movie character in history. Don't know who he is? Well, maybe this theme music might give you an idea of who I'm talking about. That's right, Count Dracula. Count Dracula is the title character of Bram Stoker's 1897 gothic horror novel of the same name. He is considered to be both the prototypical and the archetypal vampire in subsequent works of fiction. He is also depicted in the novel to be the origin of werewolf legends. Some aspects of the character are believed to have been inspired by the 15th century prince Vlad the Impaler, who is also known as Dracula. One of Dracula's most iconic powers is his ability to turn others into vampires by biting them, and other character aspects have been added or altered in subsequent popular fiction works. Bram Stoker's novel takes the form of an epistolary tale, in which Count Dracula's characteristics, powers, abilities, and weaknesses are narrated by multiple narrators from different perspectives. Count Dracula is an undead, centuries-old vampire and a Transylvanian nobleman who claims to be a CK descended from Attila the Hun. He inhabits a decaying castle in the Carpathian Mountains near the Borgo Pass. And unlike the vampires of Eastern European folklore, which are portrayed as repulsive, corpse-like creatures, Dracula is actually quite handsome. In his conversations with Jonathan Harker, he reveals himself as deeply proud of his heritage and nostalgic for the past, which he admits has become only a memory of heroism, honor, and valor in modern times. Details of his early life are undisclosed, but it is mentioned, quote-unquote, he was in life a most wonderful man, soldier, statesman, and alchemist. And this latter was the highest development of the scientific knowledge of his time. He had a mighty brain, a learning beyond compare, and a heart that knew no fear and no remorse. There was no branch of knowledge of his time that he did not essay. He studied the black arts at the Academy of Scholomance in the Carpathian Mountains overlooking the town of Sibiu, and he has a deep knowledge of alchemy and magic. Taking up arms as befitting his rank and status as a voivode, he led troops against the Turks across the Danube. And according to his nemesis, Abraham Van Helsing, he must indeed have been that voivode Dracula who won his name against the Turk over the great river on the very frontier of Turkeyland. And if it be so, then he was no common man. For in that time, and for centuries after, he was spoken of as the cleverest and the most cunning, as well as the bravest of the sons of the land beyond the forest. Dead and buried in a great tomb in the chapel of his castle, Dracula returns from death as a vampire and lives for several centuries in his castle, along with three terrifyingly beautiful female vampires, or vampiresses, beside him. In Dracula's Guest, the narrative follows an unnamed Englishman traveler as he wanders around Munich before leaving for Transylvania. And it is Walpurgis night, and the young Englishman foolishly leaves his hotel, in spite of the coachman's warnings, and he wanders through a dense forest alone. And along the way, he feels that he is being watched by a tall and thin stranger. And the short story climaxes in an old graveyard, where the Englishman encounters a sleeping female vampire in a marble tomb with a large iron stake driven into it. This malevolent and beautiful vampire awakens from her slumber to conjure a snowstorm before being struck by lightning and returning to her eternal prison. However, the Englishman's troubles are not quite over, as he is dragged away by an unseen force and rendered unconscious. He awakens to find a gigantic wolf lying on his chest and licking at his throat. However, the wolf merely keeps him warm and protects him until help arrives. When the Englishman is finally taken back to his hotel, a telegram awaits him from his expectant host, Dracula, and it has a warning about, quote-unquote, dangers from snow and wolves and night. In the novel, the vampire has decided to move from Transylvania to London. He summons Jonathan Harker, who is a newly qualified English solicitor, to provide legal support for a real estate transaction overseen by Harker's employer. At first, Dracula charms Harker with his cordiality and historical knowledge, and he even rescues him from the clutches of the three female vampires in the castle. In truth, however, Dracula merely wishes to keep Harker alive long enough to complete the legal transaction and to learn as much as possible about England. Dracula leaves his castle and boards a Russian ship called the Demeter, taking along with him 50 boxes of Transylvanian soil, which he needs to regain his strength and rest during daylight. During the voyage to Whitby, a coastal town in northern England, he sustains himself on the ship's crew members. Only one body is found, that of the captain, who is found tied up to the ship's helm. The captain's log is recovered, and it tells of strange events that had taken place from the ship's journey. Dracula leaves the ship in the form of a dog. Soon, the Count begins menacing Harker's fiancée, Wilhelmina, or Mina, Murray, and her friend, Lucy Westenra. There is also a notable link between Dracula and Renfield, who is a patient in an insane asylum overseen by John Seward, who is compelled to consume spiders, birds, and other creatures in the ascending order of size to absorb their quote-unquote life force. Renfield acts as a kind of censor, reacting to Dracula's proximity and supplying clues accordingly. Dracula visits Lucy's bedchamber on a nightly basis, draining her of blood while simultaneously infecting her with the curse of vampirism. Not knowing the cause for Lucy's deterioration, her three suitors, Seward, Arthur Holmwood, and Quincy Morris, call upon Seward's mentor, who is a Dutch doctor, Abraham Van Helsing. Van Helsing soon deduces her condition's supernatural origins and tries to keep the vampire at bay with garlic. Nevertheless, Dracula attacks Lucy's house one final time, killing her mother and transforming Lucy herself into one of the undead. Harker escapes Dracula's castle and returns to England, barely alive and deeply traumatized. And on Seward's suggestion, Mina seeks Van Helsing's assistance in assessing Harker's health. She reads his journal and passes it along to Van Helsing. This unfolds the first clue to the identity of Lucy's assailant, and this later prompts Mina to collect all of the events of Dracula's appearance in news articles, saved letters, newspaper clippings, and the journals of each member of the group. This assists the group in investigating Dracula's movements and later discovering that Renfield's behavior is directly influenced by Dracula. They then discover that Dracula has purchased a residence right next door to Seward's, and the group gathers enough intelligence to track down Dracula and destroy him. After the undead Lucy attacks several children, Van Helsing, Seward, Holmwood, and Morris enter her crypt and destroy her to save her soul. Later, Harker joins them, and the party work to discover Dracula's intentions. Harker aids the party in tracking down the locations of the boxes to the various residences of Dracula, and discovers that Dracula purchased multiple real estate properties throughout London under the alias Count Deville. Dracula's main plan was to move each of his 50 boxes of earth to his various properties in order to arrange multiple lairs throughout and around the perimeter of London. The party pries open each of the graves, places sacramental wafers within each of them, and then seal them shut. This deprives Dracula of his ability to seek safety in those boxes. Dracula gains entry into Seward's residence by coercing an invitation out of Renfield. As he attempts to enter the room in which Harker and Mina are staying, Renfield tries to stop him. Dracula then mortally wounds him, and with his dying breath, Renfield tells Seward and Van Helsing that Dracula is after Mina. Van Helsing and Seward then discover Dracula biting Mina and forcing her to drink his blood. The group repels Dracula by using crucifixes and sacramental bread, forcing him to flee by turning into a dark vapor. The party continues to hunt Dracula to search for his remaining lairs. Although Dracula's baptism of Mina grants him a telepathic link to her, it backfires when Van Helsing hypnotizes Mina and uses her supernatural link with Dracula to track him as he flees back to Transylvania. The heroes follow Dracula back to Transylvania, and, in a climactic battle with Dracula's bodyguards, finally destroy him. Despite the popular image of Dracula having a stake driven through his heart to kill him, Mina's narrative describes his decapitation by Harker, while Morris simultaneously pierces his heart with a Bowie knife. Dracula's body then turns to dust, but not before Mina sees an expression of peace on his face. Although early in the novel, Dracula dons a mask of cordiality, he often flies into fits of rage when his plans are frustrated. When Dracula's brides attempt to seduce Jonathan Harker, Dracula physically assaults and ferociously berates them for their insubordination. He has an appreciation for ancient architecture, and when purchasing a home, he prefers them to be aged, saying, "A new home would kill me," and that to make a new home habitable to him would take a century. Dracula is very proud of his warrior heritage, proclaiming his pride to Harker on how the Sike people are infused with the blood of heroes. He also expresses an interest in the history of the British Empire, speaking admiringly of its people. He has a somewhat primal and predatory worldview. He pities ordinary humans for their revulsion to their darker impulses. He is not without human emotions, however. He often says that he too can love. Though usually portrayed as having a strong Eastern European accent, the original novel only specifies that his spoken English is excellent, though strangely toned. His appearance varies in age. He is described early in the novel as thin, with a long white mustache, pointed ears, and sharp teeth. It is also noted later in the novel, by a zookeeper who sees him, that he has a hooked nose and a pointed beard with a streak of white in it. He is dressed in all black and he has hair on his palms, and Harker describes him as a cruel-looking old man. As the novel progresses, Dracula is described as taking on a more and more youthful appearance. And after Harker strikes him with a shovel, he is left with a scar on his forehead, and he bears this scar throughout the course of the novel. Dracula also possesses great wealth, and he has people in his homeland who are loyal to him as servants and protectors. Count Dracula is portrayed in the novel using many different supernatural abilities, and is believed to have gained his abilities through dealings with the devil. Chapter 18 of the novel describes many of the abilities, limitations, and weaknesses of vampires, and Dracula in particular. Dracula has superhuman strength, which according to Van Helsing is equivalent to that of 20 strong men. He does not cast a shadow or have a reflection in a mirror. He is immune to conventional means of attack. Like, for example, a sailor tries to stab him in the back with a knife, but the knife doesn't hit him. The knife just goes through his body like thin air. And he can defy gravity to a certain extent and possesses superhuman agility. And he's able to climb vertical surfaces upside down in a reptilian manner. So, like, remember that scene from Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom where the Indoraptor crawled down the roof of Lockwood Estate into Maisie's room? That was actually confirmed to be a Dracula reference, crawling down the roof. And he can travel onto unhallowed ground, such as the graves of suicides and those of his victims. He has powerful hypnotic, telepathic, and illusionary abilities. He also has the ability to, within limitations, vanish and reappear elsewhere at will. If he knows the path, he can come out from anything or into anything, regardless of how close it is bound, even if it is fused with fire. He has amassed cunning and wisdom throughout centuries, and he is unable to die by the mere passing of time alone. He can tame and command animals such as rats, owls, bats, moths, foxes, and wolves. However, his control over these animals is limited, as seen when the party first enters his house in London. And although Dracula is able to summon thousands of rats to swarm and attack the group, Holmwood summons his trio of terriers to battle with the rats. The dogs proved to be very efficient rat killers, suggesting that they are Manchester Terriers that were trained for that purpose. Terrified by the dog's onslaught, the rats flee, and any control that Dracula has over them is gone. Dracula can also manipulate the weather, and within his range, is able to direct the elements, such as storms, fog, and mist. Dracula can change form at will. He's a shapeshifter. He is able to grow and become small. His featured forms in the novel are that of a bat, a wolf, a large dog, and a fog or mist. When the moonlight is shining, he can travel as elemental dust within its rays. He is able to pass through tiny cracks or crevices while retaining his human form, or in the form of a vapor, described by Van Helsing as the ability to slip through a hairbreadth space of a tomb door or coffin. This is also an ability that is used by his victim Lucy as a vampire, because when the party breaks into her tomb, they dismantle the secured coffin to find it completely empty, her corpse being no longer located within it. Dracula's most recognizable power is to turn others into vampires by biting them. And according to Van Helsing, quote-unquote from the novel, when they become such, there comes with the change the curse of immortality. They cannot die, and they must go on age after age adding new victims and multiplying the evils of the world. For all that die from the preying of the undead become themselves undead and prey on their kind. And the circle goes on ever widening, like the ripples from a stone thrown in the water. Friend Arthur, if you had met that kiss which you know of before poor Lucy die, or again, last night, when you open your arms to her, you would in time, when you had died, have become Nosferatu, as they call it in Eastern Europe, and would for all time make more of those undeads that so have filled us with horror. The vampire bite itself does not cause death, and it is the method vampires use to drain blood of the victim and to increase their influence over them. This is described by Van Helsing by saying, the Nosferatu do not die like the bees when they sting once. He is only stronger, and being stronger have yet more power to work evil. Victims who are bitten by a vampire and do not die are hypnotically influenced by them. And as quoted by Mina in Harker's journal in chapter 18, those children whose blood she suck are not yet so much worse, but if she live on, undead, more and more lose their blood, and by her power over them, they come to her. Van Helsing later describes the aftermath of a bitten victim when the vampire has been killed, by saying, but if she die in truth, then all cease. The tiny wounds of the throats disappear, and they go back to their plays, unknowing of whatever has been. So that basically means that if you get bit by a vampire and the vampire that bit you gets killed, it means that your wound just disappears and it's like it never happened. As Dracula slowly drains Lucy's blood, she dies from acute blood loss and later transforms into a vampire, despite the efforts of Seward and Van Helsing trying to provide her with blood transfusions. He is aided by his powers of necromancy and divination of the dead, that all who die by his hand may reanimate and do his bidding. Dracula requires no other sustenance but fresh human blood, which has the effect of rejuvenating him and allowing him to grow younger. His power is drawn from the blood of others, and he cannot survive without it. Although drinking blood can rejuvenate his youth and strength, it does not give him the ability to regenerate. Months after being struck on the forehead by a shovel, he still bears a scar from the impact. Dracula's preferred victims are women. Wow, how original. Harker states that he believes Dracula has a state of fasting as well as a state of feeding. And Dracula does state to Mina, however, that exerting his abilities causes a desire to feed. Count Dracula is depicted as the king vampire, and he can control other vampires. To punish Mina and the party for their efforts against him, Dracula bites her on at least 3 occasions. He also forces her to drink his blood, and this act curses her with the effects of vampirism and gives him a telepathic link to her thoughts. However, hypnotism was only to be done before dawn. Van Helsing refers to the act of drinking blood by both the vampire and the victim as the vampire's baptism of blood. You, their most beloved one, are now to me, flesh of my flesh, blood of my blood, kin of my kin, my bountiful winepress for a while, and shall be later on my companion and my helper. And you shall be avenged in turn, for not one of them but shall minister to your needs. But as yet you are to be punished for what you have done. You have aided in thwarting me. Now you shall come to my call. And when my brain says come to you, you shall travel across land or sea to do my bidding. The effects changes Mina physically and mentally over time. And a few moments after Dracula attacks her, Van Helsing takes a wafer of sacramental bread and places it on her forehead to bless her. And when the bread touches her skin, it burns her and leaves a scar on her forehead. And her teeth start growing longer, but they don't sharpen themselves to a point. And she begins to lose her appetite, feeling repulsed by normal food, and she begins to sleep more and more during the day, and cannot wake unless it's sunset and stops writing in her diary. And when Van Helsing later crumbles the same bread in a circle around her, she is unable to cross or leave the circle, discovering a new form of protection. Dracula's death can release the curse on any living victim of eventual transformation into vampire. However, Van Helsing reveals that were he to successfully escape, his continued existence would ensure that even if he did not victimize Mina further, she would eventually transform into a vampire upon her natural death. Dracula is much less powerful in daylight, and he's only able to shift his form at dawn, noon, and dusk. If it's nighttime or if he's at his grave, then he can shift his form freely. The sun is not fatal to him, as sunlight does not burn and destroy him upon contact, though most of his abilities do cease. Quote unquote from the novel, "The sun that rules on our sorrow this morning guards us in its course. Until it sets tonight, that monster must retain whatever form he now has. So if his last form was a person, then he's got to stay as a person. If it was a bat, then he stays a bat," and so on and so forth. "He is confined within the limitations of his earthly envelope. He cannot melt into thin air, nor disappear through cracks or chinks or crannies. If he goes through a doorway, he must open the door like a mortal. And his power ceases, as does that all of all evil things at the coming of day. Only at certain times can he have limited freedom. If he be not at the place whither he is bound, he can only change himself at noon or exact sunrise or sunset. He is also limited in his ability to travel, as he can only cross running water at high or low tide. Owing to this, he is unable to fly across a river in the form of a bat or mist, or even by himself board a ship or step off a ship onto a dock, unless he is physically carried over with assistance. He is also unable to enter a place unless invited to do so by someone of the household, even a visitor. Once invited, he can enter and leave the premises at will. Now, his weaknesses. Dracula has a bloodlust which he is seemingly unable to control. At the sight of blood, he becomes enveloped in a demonic fury which is fueled by the need to feed. It's also known as the thirst. So basically, once a vampire gets a taste for blood, that's when it craves it. It needs it, and it'll do anything it can to get it. His next weakness is religious symbolism. There are items which afflict him to the point he has no power and can even calm him from his insatiable appetite for blood. He is repulsed by garlic, as well as sacred items and symbols such as crucifixes and sacramental bread. "At the instant I saw that the cut had bled a little and the blood was trickling over my chin, I laid down the razor, turning as I did so half round to look for some sticking plaster, and when the Count saw my face, his eyes blazed with a sort of demonic fury as he suddenly made a grab at my throat. I drew away, and his hand touched the string beads which held the crucifix. And it made an instant change in him, for the fury passed so quickly that I could hardly believe it was ever there." And that was quoted in Dracula Chapter 2. Placing the branch of a wild rose upon the top of his coffin will render him unable to escape it. And a sacred bullet fired into the coffin could kill him so that he remains truly dead. Mountain ash is also described as a form of protection from a vampire, although the effects of it are unknown. This was believed to be used as protection against evil spirits and witches during the Victorian era. His next weakness is death sleep. and the state of rest to which vampires are prone during the day is described in the novel as a death-like sleep, in which the vampire sleeps open-eyed, is unable to awaken or move, and also may be unaware of any presence of individuals who may be trespassing. Dracula is portrayed as being active in daylight at least once just to pursue a victim. He also purchases many properties throughout London, quote-unquote, over-the-counter, and this shows that he does have the ability to have some type of presence in daylight. And again, quote-unquote from the novel, on a pile of newly dug earth lay the Count. He was either dead or asleep. I could not say which, for the eyes were open and stony, but without the glassiness of death, and the cheeks had the warmth of life through all their pallor. And the lips were red as ever, but there was no sign of movement, no pulse, no breath, no beating of the heart. I bent over him and tried to find any sign of life, but in vain. I thought he might have the keys on him, but when I went to search, I saw the dead eyes, and in them, dead though they were, such a look of hate, though unconscious of me or my presence, that I fled from the place and leaving the Count's room by the window. He requires Transylvanian soil to be nearby to him in a foreign land, or to be entombed within his coffin within Transylvania in order to successfully rest. Otherwise, he will be unable to recover his strength. This has forced him to transport many boxes of Transylvanian earth to each of his residences in London. He is most powerful when he is within his earth home, coffin home, hell home, or any place hallowed. Further, if Dracula or any vampire has had their fill in blood upon feeding, they will be caused to rest in this dead state even longer than usual. Other abilities. While universally feared by the local people of Transylvania and beyond, Dracula commands the loyalty of gypsies and a band of Slovaks, who transport his boxes on their way to London to serve as an armed convoy bringing his coffin back to the castle. The Slovaks and gypsies appear to know his true nature, for they laugh at Harker when he tries to communicate his plight and betray Harker's attempt to send a letter through them by giving it to the Count. Dracula seems to be able to hold influence over people with mental disorders, such as Renfield, who is never bitten, but who worships Dracula, over the course of the novel, calling him Master and Lord. Dracula also afflicts Lucy with chronic sleepwalking, putting her into a trance-like state that allows them to not only submit to his will, but seek him and satisfy his need to feed. Dracula's powers and weaknesses vary greatly in the many adaptations. Previous and subsequent vampires from different legends have had similar vampire characteristics. Now here's the history of how this famous vampire got his name. Already in 1958, Cecil Kirtley proposed that Dracula shared his personal past with the historical Transylvanian-born voivode Vlad III Dracula, also known as Vlad the Impaler. Following the publication of In Search of Dracula by Radu Florisu, sorry if I butchered your name, and Raymond McNally in 1972, this supposed connection attracted much popular attention. This work argued that Bram Stoker based his Dracula on Vlad the Impaler. Well, he technically did. And historically, the name Dracula is the given name of Vlad Tepe's family, a name derived from a secret fraternal order of knights called the Order of the Dragon to uphold Christianity and defend the empire against the Ottoman Turks. Vlad II, Dracul, father of Vlad the Impaler, was admitted to the order around 1431 because of his bravery in fighting the Turks and was dubbed Dracul, dragon or devil. Thus, his son became Dracula, son of the dragon. From 1431 onward, Vlad II wore the emblem of the order and later, as the ruler, his coinage bore the dragon symbol. Stoker came across the name Dracula in his reading on Romanian history and chose this to replace the name Count Vampire that he originally intended to use for his villain. However, some Dracula scholars, who were led by Elizabeth Miller, have questioned the depth of this connection as early as 1998. They argue that Stoker, in fact, knew little of Vlad the Impaler, and that he only used the name Dracula and some miscellaneous scraps of Romanian history. Also, there are no comments about Vlad the Impaler in the author's working notes. While having a conversation with Harker in Chapter 3, Dracula refers to his own background, and these speeches show elements that Stoker directly copied from an account of the principalities of Wallachia and Moldavia, with various political observations relating to them by William Wilkinson. Stoker mentions the voivode of the Dracula race who fought against the Turks after the defeat in the Battle of Kosovo and was later betrayed by his brother. Historical facts, which unequivocally point to Vlad the Impaler, described as Voivode Dracula by Wilkinson. Quote unquote, "Who was it but one of my own race who as Voivode crossed the Danube and beat the Turk on his own ground? This was a Dracula indeed. What was it that his own unworthy brother, when he had fallen, sold his people to the Turk and brought the shame of slavery on them? And was it not this Dracula indeed who inspired that other of his race, who in a later age, again and again, brought his forces over the great river into Turkeyland, who when he was beaten back, came again and again, though he had to come alone from the bloody field, where his troops were being slaughtered, since he knew that he alone could ultimately triumph?" The Count's intended identity is later commented by Professor Van Helsing, referring to a letter from his friend Arminius, by saying the same thing that I said earlier. He must indeed have been that Voivode Dracula who won his name against the Turk. And this indeed encourages the reader to identify the Count with the Voivode Dracula first mentioned by him in Chapter 3, the one betrayed by his brother, Vlad the Impaler, who was betrayed by his brother, Radu the Handsome, who had chosen the side of the Turks. But as noted by a Dutch author in Chapter 25, Van Helsing and Mina drop this rudimentary connection to Vlad the Impaler, and instead, they describe the Count's personal past as that of that other of his race who lived in a later age. By smoothly exchanging Vlad for a nameless double, Stoker avoided his main character being unambiguously linked to a historical person traceable in any history book. Similarly, the novelist did not want to disclose the precise site of the Count's residence, Castle Dracula. As confirmed by Stoker's own handwritten research notes, the novelist had a specific location for the castle in mind while writing the narrative, an empty mountaintop in the Transylvanian Alps near the former border with Moldavia. Efforts to promote the Poenari Castle, 200 kilometers away from the novel's place of action, near the Borgo Pass, as the real Castle Dracula, have no basis in Stoker's writing. Stoker did not know of this building. Regarding the Bran Castle near Brzozov, Stoker possibly saw an illustration of Castle Bran in Charles Bonner's 1865 book, Transylvania, Its Products and Its People. And although Stoker may have been inspired by its romantic appearance, neither Bonner nor Mazzucchelli, nor Cross, who also mention it, associated with Vlad the Impaler. For the site of his fictitious Castle Dracula, Stoker preferred an empty mountaintop. And Dracula has been portrayed by more actors and more visual media adaptations of the novel than any other horror character. The actors who have played him include Max Schreck, John Carradine, Christopher Lee, Frank Langella, Jack Palance, Gary Oldman, Leslie Nielsen, lots of actors. And the character is closely associated with the Western cultural archetype of vampire, and it still remains a popular Halloween costume to this day. So, that's going to be it for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, be sure to like and subscribe to my podcast. It comes out every 2 weeks. And before I sign off, I would just like to say that if you want to contact me, go to sdmcpodcast@gmail.com. I also just wanted to say happy Halloween, everyone. And I'm going to sign off with a very stern warning. Kids, take this episode seriously. Take a big jar of garlic to bed with you. And if at some point in the night you hear anything, whatever you do, don't look out your window. Because it might be a vampire!